This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Hi, I'm Jamie Bussin. I'm a former commercial litigator who used to weigh 242 pounds. When I was 38 years old, I lost over 50 pounds through a regimen of exercise and better nutrition. It took me a year to reach my goal, but I thought if a type A personality like me could do it, really anybody can. I'm still asking questions and learning about what it means to live a healthy lifestyle. Please join me on this continuing journey. Today, we'll discuss the biochemistry of better rest with nutraceutical formulator Dr. Gordon Chang. We'll find out about World COPD Day with COPD Canada co-founder Henry Roberts. We'll discover the restorative power of nature with author Diane Ebert-Biaf. And lastly, we'll learn how cold plunges affect gut bacteria with health CEO Alex Martinez. Before we get to that, here's your Tonic Quick Shot. Adults with gum disease may have more signs of brain injury, according to new research published recently in Neurology Open Access. The study found a link between gum disease and small bright spots on brain scans called white matter hyperintensities, which indicate tissue damage. While the research doesn't prove that gum disease causes brain injury, it suggests the two may be related. White matter helps different parts of the brain communicate. Damage to it can affect memory, balance, and coordination, and may raise the risk of stroke. Scientists believe that inflammation from gum disease could harm blood vessels in the brain. The researchers studied over 1,100 adults with an average age of 77. Those with gum disease had more white matter damage than those without it. Even after adjusting for factors like age, blood pressure, and smoking, people with gum disease were 56% more likely to have high levels of white matter injury. Dr. Suvik Sen, the study's lead author, said that these findings show how oral health may play a role in brain health. He added that good dental care might help protect the brain as we age. Question: what's the best way to make sure you're getting the most up-to-date and accurate health and wellness information? Answer: The Tonic newsletter, of course. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. I'll be joined by Dr. Gordon Chang in a moment, but first, a little bit of business. I'd like to give a shout out to our long-standing sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000 square foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit OmegaAlpha.com. Omega Alpha's products are created by their scientific team headed by their owner, operator, and CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Dr. Chang holds a PhD in physiology and biomedical engineering from the University of Toronto. He also has 2 years postdoctoral experience in clinical biochemistry, looking at free radicals and antioxidants. He's published over 20 peer-reviewed articles and conference proceedings, and he's a frequent guest on this show. Welcome back, Gordon. How are you?
Very good, Jimmy. I'm getting my extra 1 hour sleep because of the turning back of the clock.
Yeah, it's
the, as a pig in poop.
It's the sweet time of year, and it's apropos because we're being cutting edge today, Gordon. You ready? We're going to talk about the biochemistry of better rest. Okay,
for sure.
Let's start off with hormones because people may not appreciate how they impact sleep quality. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Okay. In sleep, there are several hormones that we have to be aware of. Now, I can go through the whole gamut, but I think if I do that, it'll be too much. I'll just talk about some of the biggest ones, right? Mm-hmm. The ones that we normally talk about are things like melatonin, right? Cortisol, right? Those are the two big ones that seem to have the most impact upon sleep. But then we shouldn't forget the things like epinephrine, which is responsible for your fight or flight responses, right? Things like acetylcholine is also important. Adenosine is also important. And also GABA is also important. The problem with talking about all these hormones is that I would love to say one hormone is the most important and it rules everything. No. What the basic thing is, It's the interaction of these hormones with each other. And it's a very complex story with the hormones. But normally when we talk about the hormonal influences of sleep, these are the big ones. It seems to be that cortisol is one of the biggest ones that everybody talks about. And cortisol is also one of these hormones that we call a stress hormone also, because your regular levels of cortisol, if you're stressed, is higher. And if your levels of cortisol are high, it interferes with your sleep also. So sometimes when you look at cortisol, you have to look at ways of lowering cortisol. But there are ways you can lower your cortisol naturally. And when I say naturally, I'm talking about without the intervention of herbs or anything, just something as simple as meditation.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you are well aware of this, Jamie. You probably have much more better ideas about how to regulate cortisol that way, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. You mean like lifestyle choices, like exercise.
Lifestyle choices, exercise, etc.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
Right. And these are some of the things that we can go through, right? But I think that's been covered by a lot of different people already. What I would like to talk about is a little bit of some of the herbal things that we can use for cortisol.
Okay.
To help with cortisol. One of the biggest one that comes to my mind all the time is ginseng, all right? Or even another one, ashwagandha. There's several other herbs that will do that. Now, how do ginseng and all the ashwagandha do? This is just two adaptogen herbs that comes to my mind right off the top, right? Well, how these things work is that they help fight the effects of stress. Now, when I say fight the effects of stress, it might help you sleep better. But also, one of the problems with these herbs is when I say sleep better, you can't take it just before bed. You got to take it in the morning, right? And because if you take it just before bed, it will keep you awake.
Ah.
Right? So what this does is gives you the energy in the morning. And if you have the energy in the morning and then you follow up with exercise, by the time bedtime rolls around, if you're doing physical work, you are tired. And when you're tired, you sleep. When you sleep, you wake up the next morning more refreshed. And if you wake up the next morning more refreshed, you don't need as much ginseng or any other of these stimulating herbs.
That makes sense.
Makes sense?
What about B vitamins? You alluded to it. I think cortisol impacts vitamin B, right?
Yeah, again, it's the interaction of all of these things, right? Now, you can take B vitamins. Remember, one of my things is that I don't like to say that this is the magic bullet, because there right. is no magic bullet. So some people just want to say, we'll take B vitamins and we don't got to do anything else, and that will cure my sleep issues. No, right? It's another weapon that you can also use, right? Because if you can take B vitamins, but you have problems, you have emotional problems, okay? All the B vitamins in the world is not going to help you. You have to deal with your emotional issues, right? So this is why there's no magic one approach that fits all where sleep is concerned. However, after having said all those things, right, one of the things I would like to say to everybody, exercise is one of the biggest things that will help with sleep. The exercise helps get rid of extra stress, right?
Mm-hmm.
It rebalances your hormonal systems, okay? And it is one of the biggest chinks in the armor that actually works. But it's a lifestyle choice.
It is. I can say from experience, you have to live it and you have to be committed to it. And once you do that, you will see the results. What about antioxidants? How does it fit into the big picture of dealing with cortisol?
A lot of the effects damaging effects of a lot of these hormonal systems way down the line is also free radical mediated. So if you have antioxidants in your diet, it's also one of the ways to get rid of the negative effects of free radicals. But again, I also say free radicals, you also need free radicals for the proper functioning of your immune system. fortunately, we can never get rid of all the free radicals in the world, with no matter how much antioxidants you take, just because we cannot consume enough, right? And so what we try to do is a balanced approach. So you take your antioxidants also. I mean, even things like if you want to get a better night's sleep, a higher protein diet also helps with sleep, right? Especially protein that contains a lot of the amino acid tryptophan, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is why people post Thanksgiving dinner, if you've been having turkey, lots of tryptophan in turkey. So you get sleepy with that.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, sometimes, yeah. Gordon, when I work out, you know, I get muscle cramps and or I'm busy at work and I'm tense. I presume that if we take, if we try and relax our body and our mind, that will help us with sleep. And if that's true, are there supplements we can take to do that?
It is true if you relax your body and mind, but most of this, I think where you're trying to go with this is meditation and mindfulness, right? That is usually done without supplements and so on. I'm thinking more of a yoga approach.
What I was getting at, so for example, I take magnesium, which helps, yes, with muscle recovery. Because, you know, sometimes I'll wake up with muscle cramps, but I find that, you know, if you take magnesium, for example, some of those cramps go away, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But if I was being facetious, I would push back to you and say, don't exercise. You won't get the muscle cramps.
Yeah.
Right?
Fair. Yeah.
So it boils down to how we approach what we want to do. There, we can do a shotgun approach where we try almost everything. But I think for people who have problems sleeping, I mean, whether you like it or not, there are people, as you get older, you don't sleep as much, right?
Okay.
And that is a hormonal thing. Getting old is a hormonal thing. So I know what some people would do would be to take herbs which boost the testosterone levels in men, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can boost the testosterone level, it also helps with sleep. Also, things like boosting growth hormone also helps with sleep, all right? But I would never advocate anybody go and take a shot of growth hormone just because they need more sleep. Because unfortunately, it's a very complex question, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could say that just take this and all will be well.
When you wake up in the morning and you have aches and pains, or if you have aches and pains when you're stretching, which sometimes have, and that can impact your sleep as well. Like, what does that mean? Is your body missing something?
No. If you it's normal wear and tear on your body. For example, if you're exercising, there's always micro tears in your muscle tissue.
Mm-hmm.
These micro tears is how the muscle builds up and gets stronger, right? And anytime you have micro tears, right? There's inflammation associated with micro tears, and the inflammation associated with micro tears is what actually causes some of the pain, right? So you can help with some of this by there are several things that people will do, like antioxidant. This is again where antioxidants will be helpful because it helps control some of this inflammation. There are amino acids that you can use to help build muscle faster and preserve muscle tissue, which is some one like L-glutamine is a perfect one for that, right? L-valine is another one that people would use, right, for those sorts of things, right? So the thing with sleep, it's a very, how it impacts sleep is very complex, because I know if I did some strenuous exercise and I'm all achy, I have a hard time sleeping.
Right.
But if I take some anti-inflammatory product, right, I will sleep like a baby, right? And the next morning, I might wake up stiff and sore, but it's a good feeling. It's a good, because you're well-rested, right? Anytime you're well-rested, the world looks different.
I agree with you. Unfortunately, I had a really rough night's sleep last night. So my worldview, I don't even know where I am today. You know, we've talked about all kinds of different ingredients that might help us sleep better. Can we access those through sort of like a multiplex vitamin? Is that a good approach, do you think?
It's a good approach. I like to, because I like to do provide the body with everything potentially that it would need. Okay. If I don't want to go to a pill, I would have to eat a wide variety of foods. The problem is, as with some people, they eat this, they don't eat that. They like this, they don't like that. And there are very few people who will, because of their dietary choices, etc., there are very few people who will eat everything. So the next best bet is to get something that has a wide variety of ingredients in there, right? So things I would say, take a good B vitamin complex, right? That has all the different B vitamins. That's also a good thing, right? There are things which will give you more protein, right? But I think for people who are looking at sleep, what we should be talking about is some of the herbs that people have been using in the and that we know of that will work for sleep, right? So you can use, there's one that everybody knows, which is valerian, right? But the thing about valerian is that some people, when they take valerian, they can't get past the smell, right? But my feeling is, if you're tired and but you can't sleep, you need something to shut off the brain, take some valerian. It works really, really well, right? There are other herbs that, there's one, a Chinese herb called jujube, right? That works really, really, really well, right? Again, what I would suggest for some of these things is to take a product that has a wide variety of these herbs in there, right? Because sometimes, for want of a better way of saying this, sometimes one herb works and another one doesn't. And we don't know why. It just may be something's blocking the efficacy of it, right? So you need to look for something that has a whole bunch of these different herbs in there that will actually help, right? So some of them I would like to talk about. I mean, hops is one of those. Valerian, as I spoke about, right? Passion flower is another one, right? So there's a whole bunch of these herbs that people have used, right? And again, exercise. I find that it's one of the ones that is cheapest thing to do, and but everybody, they'll find any excuse not to exercise. But the problem with exercise, you can't exercise at night and go to bed. You got to exercise early in the day, because what I found is that I have most time in the evening, and so I try to exercise about 8 o'clock or so, and I find when I do that, I don't sleep well.
I used to play basketball late at night, and I'd come home. That's when we'd get the gym, right? Same for hockey players. You get the rink at weird times, and you'd come, and I'd still be wired, right? Like I was tired physically, but mentally I was wired, and I couldn't fall asleep. And I think that's what you're talking about, right?
Definitely. So again, it's all in your timing also, when you exercise and so on. Again, so the normal things that people talk about, if you keep a routine, go to bed at a fixed time, and if you can't fall asleep, just go out there and watch TV. No, watch TV, sorry. Read a book or something like that.
Yeah,
Because
no blue light, lower the temperature, blackout shades. All great advice. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
No problem. Thanks, Jamie.
That was Dr. Gordon Chang. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss World COPD Day on The Tonic. Cataracts are the leading cause of vision loss in adults over 50. But the good news is they're highly treatable. At Oakville Laser Eye Center, patients receive advanced laser cataract surgery with personalized surgeon-led care. Using cutting-edge technology and customized treatment plans, their expert team helps patients see clearly again to help them rediscover life's details. Book your consultation today at www.oakvillelaser.ca or call 905-337-3736. Does your skin need some pampering? Treat yourself to a luxurious exotic oil from New Roots Herbal. Organic or wild-crafted, these oils are sourced from around the globe and tested to ensure purity. Never diluted, they're rich in vitamins and nutrients for radiant, healthy-looking skin. Choose from a wide variety including argan, rosehip, or Skin Lovers Blend. Now available in a stunning gift set, perfect for that special someone. Available only at fine health food stores.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Henry Roberts is a member of the executive committee and a co-founder of the Chronic Obstructive Pulmonary Disease Association, COPD Canada, a national nonprofit patient advocacy association whose primary objective is to increase national public awareness of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Henry is a retired magazine publisher, just like me, who is involved in the Canadian publishing industry for over 40 years, primarily in medical communications. Welcome back to the show, Henry. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me, Jamie.
So, you know, people may remember our last interview on this, but if they haven't, what is COPD?
Okay, well, COPD is an acronym for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And within that broad category are three specific conditions. One is chronic bronchitis, second is emphysema, and the third is alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. Emphysema is definitely the largest category within COPD. Emphysema involves the destruction of the air sacs called the alveoli in the lungs, which reduces the surface area for oxygen exchange. This results in shortness of breath and reduced lung function. In chronic bronchitis, the airways become inflamed and narrow. This leads to increased production of mucus, causing a persistent cough and difficulty in breathing. I've had members of COPD Canada describe this as drowning in your own phlegm when they wake up. It's particularly pronounced after sleep. And alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency is a genetic disorder that affects about 5% of the people with COPD. It's caused by a deficiency of a protein called alpha-1 antitrypsin. People with alpha-1 have to be extremely careful to not expose themselves to smoke or other toxins. And, you know, now we have raging fireflies that they've got to be extremely concerned about as well. Hmm. So that's basically the overview of the disease.
How many people are affected by this condition?
Well, around the world, there are about 384 million people, and
wow,
it's the third leading cause of death globally. In Canada, according to Statistics Canada, there are 840,000 people have been diagnosed with COPD and are living with it. The Lung Health Foundation estimates that upwards of 2 million people have COPD, with almost half being unaware that they have the condition. A lot of people, particularly smokers, are in denial. They obfuscate. They don't describe their symptoms to their doctors because they don't want to quit smoking, quite frankly. So we have we have the diagnosed, and we have probably the same number of people who are undiagnosed.
And is smoking the leading cause of COPD?
It is. Cigarette smoking is by far the leading cause of COPD. And our members, range in age from 65 to about 85. So we all grew up during the heyday of cigarette smoking through the 50s, 60s, and 70s, where tobacco advertising was everywhere. We were on TV. I have copies of the Flintstones cartoons with Freddie and Barney having smokes behind a big boulder, and ads of doctors proclaiming that this is their favorite cigarette. So, you know, at that time, so it's I like to ask people to show a little grace to people with COPD, you know, who particularly the older ones, because we went through, quite a period of saturation advertising from the tobacco industry.
I mean, it was all documented on the series Mad Men. The tobacco advertising was front and center, and sort of the dichotomy of how it was put out there and how ultimately it was restricted is all sort of set out there. So for those who are interested, you might want to rewatch the show.
Yeah, I use Mad Men as an example of what it was like for me and others who grew up in media. We could smoke in the office. We could drink in the office. When we took our clients out, they were very liquid lunches. And you could smoke on airplanes. You could smoke in the theater.
Yeah.
It was just everywhere. If you wanted, if you didn't smoke, you weren't cool, actually. And the Hollywood in particular glamorized smoking. So the women who were, the glamorous women of the age were smoking cigarettes, some with the long filter type things. And the industry launched Virginia Slim. So they addicted all the men. The men were addicted coming out of the war. And then they launched Virginia Slims and other female specific advertising to capture the women as well.
Is there a cure for COPD?
There is no cure for COPD. It's a progressive disease, which means it worsens over time. If you experience an exacerbation or a flare-up, I like to call them lung attacks, you almost always end up in worse condition than where you were pre-exacerbation. So in people with COPDs, exacerbations lead to a step down in lung function and overall health. So it's extremely important to be aware of exacerbations, know when you're having one, and respond accordingly.
Within Canada, are the needs of those who have COPD, are they being met?
No, there's a serious lack of access to spirometry testing across the country. Spirometry is a test that measures how forcefully you can exhale, as well as it'll test your inhaling ability. So what this test is, you blow into the spirometry machine, spirometer, and it measures the percentage difference between how quickly you can exhale versus someone who is healthy, you're the same age, height, and sex. And so your ability to exhale is compared to a healthy person just like you. And they call that score your FEV score. So FEV1, or forced expiratory volume, if it's greater than 80% of the healthy person, you would be in stage one. If it's between 50 and 70% as forceful as you, so you'd be FEV2. Your predicted value is between 50 and 79%. Stage three is a score between 30 and 49%. And stage four, the most serious stage of COPD, you have 30% of the lung volume, the expiratory volume of a healthy person. And typically at about 30%, you're asked to go on supplementary oxygen. I was on a Zoom call the other day with a specialist from Northern Quebec, and she couldn't get a spirometry test for her patients. They just weren't available, no matter, what the willingness of the doctor, the willingness of the patient. There's just nobody there in that region. And the other thing is, there's very different coverages across the country. Some provinces will cover the test itself, but the physician doesn't get paid. Other provinces, it's a mess. There is no national standard and national repayment schedule.
And I imagine it's the same with the drug coverage. If there isn't testing uniformity, there probably isn't coverage uniformity either.
Well, without the spirometry test, the convincing insurance companies to if you don't have the, if you're not over 65, to cover it would be very difficult.
What are the guidelines that are set out by the Canadian Thoracic Society for treating the disease if it's not curable?
Well, if you've been diagnosed with the disease, they'll put you on a medicine, either a LAMA, which is a anti-muscarinic agent. It softens or it relaxes the airways, or they'll put you on a LABA, which is a long-acting bronchodilator that opens up the airways. And if you're still getting worse, they'll put you on a LAMA plus a LABA dual therapy. And if you continue getting worse, usually it's after an exacerbation, because you're stepping down. Every time you have a flare-up or a lung attack, you come out worse than you went in. And if the double therapy isn't working, then they move you to a triple therapy. So the drug companies, two of them, AstraZeneca and GSK, have come out with these triple therapy products. One's called Trelegy, the other one's called Breztri. And a very small portion of people are on the triple therapy, which is the maximum you could get up until about a week ago, and they're still exacerbating. So they're ending up in emergency rooms most of the time. But now there's a new biologic that's just been launched, which is added to the triple therapy. So now, there's more hope for people there. So one of the companies has launched that. It's just been approved, and there's a second one in the pipeline that should be approved within, I think I was told, the spring of next year. So there'll be options for people after they, I don't want to call it graduating out of triple therapy, but that's kind of what it is. But you'll still be on your triple therapy. They'll just add these biologics to the process.
Time for one last question. The reason that we're having this interview is that World COPD Day is coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, World COPD Day is a global initiative. Most of the major lung companies and patient advocacy groups all work together using the same theme everywhere in every jurisdiction of the world. And this year's theme is Short of Breath, Think COPD. This is, targeting people who are undiagnosed, people who are having exacerbations, but don't fully realize that they are. They're not going to an action plan, or they don't have an action plan. But the messaging for World COPD Day will be the same. So we've started here in Canada. Our colleagues in the UK have started. In the United States, we've started. In Spain, France, and so on and so forth. So the World COPD Day is a week today. It's on November 19th, and people will be seeing this social media, Short of Breath, Think COPD messaging, and all kinds of ways, whether it be Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn and so on.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you, Jamie.
That was Henry Roberts. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss the restorative power of nature on The Tonic. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, is a progressive lung condition which can cause obstruction of airflow in the lungs, resulting in debilitating bouts of breathlessness. November 19th is World COPD Day, a global initiative to increase awareness of COPD. For more information, visit copdcanada.info. This cold and flu season, discover the power of medicinal mushrooms. Rich in antioxidants and known to naturally support your immune system, medicinal mushrooms are one of nature's most powerful defenders. Trusted by Canadians for over 20 years, CanPrev Natural Health now offers medicinal mushroom supplements. Every capsule combines both fruiting body extract and mycelium, providing the full spectrum of medicinal compounds for a full spectrum of benefits. Gentle enough for daily use so you can stay supported all season long. Now available at your local health food store.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Diane Ebert-Biaf began her writing career in magazine journalism, and her work has appeared in a variety of nonfiction publications, including Arizona Highways, Tucson Magazine, Vegetarian Times, and Horse and Horseman. Biaf is also a poet and artist, working primarily in graphite and watercolor. Her artwork has been featured in local, national, and international galleries. She's a native of Kitchener, and she now lives in Arizona with her husband, Dan. And for more information, you can visit www.debeaff.wordpress.com or on Instagram at Diane Biaf. Welcome to the show, Diane. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fine. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you have a new book, which is called Infinite Paradise, Witnessing the Wild, which you describe as a nature memoir. What does that mean?
Well, the company is actually marketing it as a memoir, and it is my memories of this particular place, 16 acres on the Conestoga River, very close to where you are. I would say it's focused on nature, on people's ability to interact with nature, to be healed by nature. So that's a little level above a memoir to me. So that's why I called it a nature memoir.
Why do you think being in nature is so important, particularly now in this day and age?
Well, I think we're living in extremely stressful times, and I am still thoroughly Canadian, even though I live down here. So I don't know whether this is whether I should say this, but things are very difficult down here, and I think they're becoming difficult all over the world and have been for a long time. And we've got various things going on that fill us with stress. We cannot get any peace of mind. So interacting with nature automatically will give you an inner peace, a calmness. Even if you have a very short time to spend in nature, it will calm you down. It will ground you again to make it through the rest of your day to handle some of these issues that are coming at us a mile a minute these days.
Let's elaborate on that a bit and sort of dig into sort of the emotional, spiritual, and health factors of being in nature. Like, I know what I like. Like, we go for hikes, you know, in and around the escarpment, and we take our dog. And for me, you know, just not being on my phone and, you know, just taking a break from the city, although I am a city boy, recharges me. What is it for you, and what do you hope the book evokes for people?
In a way, it's the same thing for me, and that's what I want to stress for other people. I think emotionally, as you say, it gives you an inner peace, it gives you a calmness. To be out in nature is just such an escape from all the things that we are going through in our personal lives and our work lives and all of that. Spiritually, I think there's a communion involved in becoming close to nature. You can feel the connectedness of all things. You feel a respect for the other lives that live around you, the other beings that live around you. And health-wise, there are so many positives in being in nature. It helps with depression. It can help ease stress. It can help lower your blood pressure. There's just no end to it. So I totally agree with you. It's to get out into nature gives you a recharging moment. And I think that's so important in this day and age when we're all so hit with screens to look at all the time. And so it's a great escape.
I've been to Arizona, and most people think, you know, it's all desert. But actually, as the elevation goes up, there are some sort of, like, I've hiked through a pine forest up there, even as far south as Tucson. Where are you? Like, do you get into the forest in Arizona, or is it more spending your time in the desert when you get out?
No, I actually live in my main home is in Tucson, and then we spend our summers at the cottage there. But so I'm in Tucson, so I know what you mean. You can go up into our mountains, which are 9,000 feet, and the sit down in the city we're about 2,000 feet above sea level. So we can go walk in the forest, we can go up the mountain. And this is a nice thing too. I had a lot of Canadian winter, and I find it difficult
Yeah,
now.
I hear you.
But you can go up into the mountains, and if we've had a snowstorm go or a storm go past, there will be snow in the mountains. You can go up there, you can have a little bit of winter, and you come down again, and you're into fall or you're into spring, depending on which side you're on. So, and then we have a small cabin in the Chiricahua Mountains, which are in the southeast part of Arizona, and we spend time up there weekends and a week here and there. And it's lovely. It's just such an escape because we're on the edge of Tucson, and Tucson is a city of over 1 million people now. So we're on the edge. We're about 4 miles from the mountains, from going up from the road that goes up the mountains. The Catalinas
Oh,
here.
wow. That's where we
Oh,
were. So,
really?
yeah,
Yes.
Canyon Ranch is situated there, the original one,
Yes. Yes,
and that's
it
where we
is.
were.
Lovely.
So you touched upon it a moment ago, the changing of seasons, which is obviously more pronounced up here. What do you find so compelling about that, and how did that reflect in your book?
Well, I found the structure worked better, just breaking down the experiences into it's 1 year, but all of those experiences are real experiences that we did all have. It wasn't all in that 1 year, but that was a better way to structure it. And then to breaking that down into the seasons. And I also find that I don't think there are many straight lines in nature, and time doesn't really isn't linear. Time and nature, I think, both work in cycles. So you have an automatic cycle with the changing of the seasons. And if you know how, if you know where to look, and if you've lived here, you know where to find the changing of the seasons, the, you know, the masses of blankets of sun, of wildflowers in the spring, the changing of the leaves on the mountains, and even some of our trees in town here will change color. So you have to know it's not as vibrant and brilliant as it is the changing of the leaves up there, which is just gorgeous. But that's why I, the structurally, it worked well for the what I was trying to do. And then I also look at nature as moving in that way, and time kind of moves in cycles and spirals.
So 18 acres, you know, it's an interesting space, right? Because in some ways it's vast, but in other ways it's not. You know, the property in question is forest and water meadow, as you describe it. What are some of the species that were located there?
Oh, we have a great many. And part of the beauty of that is that, as you know, it, Southern Ontario is some of the richest farming land in the world.
Right.
And so this particular property, there's a lot of it. And even though it's only the 16 acres, there's a lot of it that has never been farmed, that has never grown a crop, that has never been grazed. So they call it, it's almost primordial, especially across the river at a certain, it's never been anything done to it. So it's like the way it was hundreds of years ago. So there's that. But so in that land, we don't have any big predators. We have red fox and we have coyotes and weasels, and we've seen a mink once and not a second time. But and then there's all the usual forest animals of the north there, the raccoons and skunks and the red squirrel, chipmunks. We have white-tailed deer and, of course, beaver and muskrat on the river, and lots of birds. We have ruffed grouse, and we have black vultures. And though one of the black vultures nested in an old cabin that is kind of moldering away on the property, it nested in there one year, which was lovely. And we have green heron and owls and red-tailed hawk. We have bald eagles that have not nested on the property, but do pass through now and again. We see them. So there's a little bit of everything, lots of songbirds, lots of plants, lots of trees.
What do you think you've learned from spending time on the property?
Oh, my. I think one of the main things is the power of nature and the connections that we have with the natural world. It's a wonderful place to interact. We name a lot of our animals. So we spent one fall with a Rufus, a ruffed grouse, who went with us everywhere. We'd sit by the river and he'd come and sit with us, and he drummed us off when we left. So that's what I've really learned, that we were all connected in the world, and that nature has such a power to heal, to give us hope in a difficult world, because there are still riches that survive no matter how much global warming has decimated things. So there's a lot of positives to it. And I've learned a lot about the plants and the animals, of course, on the property.
For someone who hasn't had the time or doesn't spend a lot of time in nature, how would you suggest they begin their journey towards experiencing nature?
I would say that whatever is near you, take advantage of it. If you have a park down the way, just go down there. It's lovely to, you know, keep in contact with your friends and all of that on a little screen sometime, or read. I'm all for reading. But sometimes if you've just got a park, just go and sit there. Just sit and watch. Birds will come, squirrels, if there's squirrels in there, chipmunks, whatever is in that park. If you don't even have that, if you're in the middle of a big city, and big cities have lovely parks too, like where you have your Toronto Island and Central Park and things like that. But even if you just have a balcony, put some flower pots out there and something that attracts hummingbirds or butterflies, and just sit and watch them. So just begin that way, to know that that is always there for you. You can expand it. You can go hiking in the mountains if you've got mountains nearby, on the escarpment and all of that. But to begin, just look at it and know that there is something out there all the time. And sometimes it just takes sitting a short time and waiting for it to come to you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
It was lovely. Thank you for having me. It's been most enjoyable.
That was Diane Ebert-Biaf. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss cold plunges and gut bacteria on The Tonic. I'd like to give a shout out to our long-standing sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000 square foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit omegaalpha.com. The Big Carrot is a worker-owned natural food market that's been committed to organic, local, non-GMO, and sustainable food systems since opening in Toronto in 1983. They're a one-stop shop for health and wellness, offering organic produce, natural grocery, natural beauty and skincare products, and a holistic dispensary for natural supplements and more. The Carrot Kitchen and coffee bars serve delicious meals and drinks using high-quality ingredients sourced from local farmers and suppliers that prioritize organic, non-GMO, and/or sustainable practices. Visit one of their two locations in Toronto today. Shop the Big Carrot on Instacart now.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Alex Martinez, CEO and co-founder of Intrinsic Medicine, is a patient, entrepreneur, business advisor, and healthcare industry leader committed to transforming how gut-brain immune axis, GIBA, disorders are diagnosed and treated. Driven to lead positive change within the healthcare industry, Alex co-founded Intrinsic Medicine, aiming to leverage human milk biology to transform diseases caused by immune and microbiome dysregulation, including Parkinson's, juvenile idiopathic arthritis, IBS, IBD, autism spectrum disorder, and other GIBA disorders. Welcome back to the show, Alex. How are you?
I'm good, Jamie. Thanks for having me back.
So it's getting colder here. You're down in the States, but you know, things are already turning here. The leaves are gone. It's getting cold. Mm-hmm. And I've never actually considered this, but how might cold temperatures impact our gut bacteria? I didn't know that was a thing. Is that a thing?
So it's absolutely a thing. And it's something where there's a decent amount of work that's now just occurring. This is actually a question I think that a lot of people and a lot of scientists have had for a while, but no one's really come up with a clear answer yet. But we do have some initial studies, both in animals and people, that indicate that this is a really important question. And so one of the things that we always want to think about as framing for what the gut microbiome is it is an environmental sensing organ of sorts. You know, if we think about that, the gut is really one, the primary way in which we're interacting with our external environment, it totally makes sense that cold temperature is going to impact the gut and vice versa. The gut can impact our tolerance and what is actually happening in our body in the presence of a colder outside environment.
So ice baths, cold plunges, we see them on Instagram and TikTok, etc. They're becoming popular for their supposed health benefits. What do we actually know about their impact on gut health? Does it do anything? Positive, negative? What is it?
Okay, so the way I'd want everyone to think about this is it's going to be a spectrum, right? So let's start with acute cold shock. So this is Jamie's walking on thin ice.
Okay.
And falls through into extremely cold water. What may actually happen is a bunch of stress hormones are released, and this would include adrenaline. It'll definitely include cortisol as well, among others. And what this will do is actually increase the permeability of your gut. So the blood flow will certainly change. The temperature of your gut will actually, you know, physically be impacted, as will things like mucus production, and, you know, digestion would be halted. And so in that context, you'd have a very leaky, permeable gut barrier.
Which sounds bad to me. That's bad, right?
So we typically think of leaky gut as bad. This is, again, an area that I'm beginning to encourage a little bit of a reframe, because human beings kind of uniquely have characteristics where our guts get really leaky, and it occurs in a variety of contexts. And so what I would suggest is, typically, you know, chronic leaky gut is not a good thing.
Right.
Right. It enables both, you know, bacteria, but also toxins and other things that we don't want circulating in our body to enter our body. However, in order for rapid adaptation, we actually might need some level of gut permeability, so that perhaps the microbiome that can respond acutely can send stronger signals that aid our body in changing and adapting to an external environment. And so I would say that, you know, on the extremely acute side of things, it can create almost a shock-like phenomenon in the body. But if you are doing this in a progressive manner, where you're progressively enhancing the cold exposure, as well as, you know, one of the things that people commonly do with the cold plunges is, you know, a lot of people hear of like the Wim Hof breathing, but any type of breathing exercise where you're also able to control that autonomic nervous system, right? So, you know, shorter inhalations, longer relaxed exhalations, or boxed breathing methods, all diaphragmatic, of course. What those really help us do is to sort of blunt that stress response and control that autonomic nervous system, which also will speak directly to the gut and maybe mitigate some of those major changes that take that permeability sort of into that excessive mode. But really going back to it is, if we do it in a progressive setting, one of the things that has been seen, it's been demonstrated in mice models of cold adaptation. There's some, you know, kind of preliminary work. They're very small, so I wouldn't say it's definitive in humans. But if we look at the small mammal models, what we see is there actually is a cold microbiota that develops when you have kind of a progressive cold exposure. And what's really interesting about this is it does lead to things that we would consider and often have been observed in human protocols of progressive cold plunging, which is that increased browning of the fat, where basically those are more mitochondria. So you're adding basically more furnaces to the cell, which promote thermogenesis, so producing heat. That completely makes sense, as well as increasing things like insulin sensitivity, so that glucose is better utilized by cells. And that's really important, because think about things like our shiver response. That's like the fastest twitch muscle response we have. And so that's where having high or increase in insulin sensitivity and getting glucose back into those, you know, ultra fast twitch muscle cells, those are all really good things. So in those animal studies, it was then shown that that cold microbiota that developed, it could actually be transplanted into mice that didn't have microbiomes, and the same metabolic effects, the browning, the beiging of fat cells, which in humans promotes a nice lean phenotype. One of the benefits that people that do this regularly observe, as well as the improved glucose and insulin responses. So that kind of is sort of the intermediate step. But then when we think of chronic cold exposure and the development of the chronic cold microbiota, it does something that, again, I think in an evolutionary adaptive sense, it's a great thing. It shows that the system works. But in the modern world, we might not like it. And what's that thing going to be? It's actually going to promote increased caloric absorption and uptake. And so it's basically increases the efficiency by which our body's able to extract calories from food and then may kind of regulate the storage of those calories a bit more.
So if that's true, if you're doing regular cold exposure, we'll call it, should you be changing your diet? Will that impact the way your body, you know, reacts to the whole situation?
Yeah. And I think it's a great question. And just to clarify my earlier comment, for almost no one that's doing regular cold plunging, Are you really going to shift fully into that sort of retention phenotype? So I think the most important thing is have a very strong foundational baseline diet. And so that's a rich, diverse, high fiber diet. That really is going to make sure that you have a diversity of bacteria in your gut, notably the ones that produce short chain fatty acids, because these are really kind of some of the major signals for that thermogenesis. So for example, fiber leads to production of something called butyrate, and butyrate is one of those amazing compounds. It directly feeds like the cells in your intestinal tract. So it's promoting resilience there. And it's also been shown to, you know, increase natural GLP-1, which most people know is, you know, a good thing for your glucose control and your metabolism, as well as to increase mitochondria, which is that kind of browning of fat. So if you have basically a healthy microbiome at baseline, even in the context of that becoming adapted, you're going to have basically a shorter time frame for the adaptation, and then you're going to have a greater number of the bacteria at baseline that are going to be important to conferring the benefits of the adaptation to you and your metabolic and thermogenic health.
For those who are enjoying cold plunges more regularly, is there anything they can do to help protect or support their gut microbiome?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a high fiber diet, and that's inclusive of both vegetables as well as fruit, is really important to maintain. The important thing is, you know, before initiating a cold plunge, or advance, if you're already doing it, kind of advancing to, you know, either colder water or longer exposure, really take a look at kind of your baseline bowel movements and stool, and use a tool called the Bristol Stool Form Scale and see where you are. Really the target number we want to look for is about a number 4. And just make sure that you have kind of a good baseline, and then also track if any of your sessions are leading to any GI distress or a deviation in sort of follow-up bowel movements. And that might, you know, give you a sense that you should dial things a little bit back and allow the body to adapt. And then in terms of in cold plunge, I think the most important thing is stay as long as you're able to maintain that nice, calm, controlled breathing. And so if people are not already doing breath work, I would strongly suggest having breath work in the cold plunge session. You know, in general, it's a much shorter inhalation and then a relaxed exhalation, or you might hear the term box breathing or Wim Hof breathing. So you can look those up, and as long as basically limit each session to as long as you're able to maintain breath control without going into full shivering mode or rapid respiratory rate.
Perfect. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jamie. Thanks for having me again.
Thanks to all my wonderful guests, Dr. Gordon Chang, Henry Roberts, Diane Ebert-Biaf, and Alex Martinez. And thank you all for listening to The Tonic. You can listen or download this episode as a podcast with full show notes, contact information for our guests, and links at thetonic.ca. To find out more about the show, you can always follow us at It's The Tonic on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. For more timely, up-to-date, and accurate health and wellness information, subscribe to The Tonic newsletter. Now distributed once a week, The Tonic newsletter, with content curated personally by me, will keep you in the loop. There's contest prizes, insider scoops, and so much more. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. If you're interested in providing feedback or suggesting topics for the show, you know you can always email me at jamie@thetonic.ca. On our next show, we'll discuss the health and wellness issues that are important to you. Until then, this is Jamie Bussin wishing you a healthy and happy week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.